Now, your favorite music apps are available on Contour from Cox. Go from watching a musical to listening to your favorite music. Enjoy a country western and then a country jam. Go from a love story to love songs. Or go from action flicks to something that makes you feel like an action hero. Now with Contour from Cox.
Welcome to Jurassic Park Radio. Join host Todd Jurassic as he explores the great outdoors and the great unknown. Here we go.
Tonight we're going to have on the show tonight my very close friend and one of my favorite cryptozoologists in the world, Chester Moore, Jr., wildlife writer, award-winning writer, photographer, and also a diehard cryptozoologist. And for many of you that don't know what that means, it means he likes to hunt for mysterious animals that may be out there. But tonight's topic, we're going to talk about Bigfoot, and Chester knows a lot about this. Chester, are you there?
Yes, sir. Excited to talk about the numero uno cryptido, Bigfoot himself, right?
Yes. One of my favorite topics that I can't get away from. It just keeps coming back to me, and no matter how long I do it, I'm still interested in it. So how are you doing tonight, sir?
You said coming back to you. You don't mean they're like showing up at your back door with garlic, do you?
Well, if my last name was Coy, then maybe. But
okay,
no, tonight. So no, it's something I put down. I come back to every time I'm in the woods. And now with the internet, you see that these things are everywhere, and not just in the in Florida and in the far west. They're in every part of the country, in every country in the world, and even my explorations briefly. And Australia and New Guinea found them to be there, too. So it's a fascinating topic and one that you've had some hair-raising experiences with. But let me just ask you, when did you first get interested in the Bigfoot phenomenon?
You know, I was a child of the 70s, you know, so I was born in 1973, the year the Legend of Boggy Creek came out. Of course, I didn't see it that year. I saw it a few years later on cable. My dad had a copy of Argosy magazine, like a men's adventure magazine, and it had pictures of the Patterson-Gimlin creature and the story of Bob Gimlin and Roger Patterson going into Bluff Creek and these really cool photos of this animal. And then I saw the Legend of Boggy Creek, you know, and my dad was interested in it, and I was born, I do believe, the good Lord put it in me to be into wildlife. And to me, this was a mystery in wildlife, and I thought it was just really fascinating that there's a possibility such a fantastic creature that was some kind of an animal that science was saying, even though it was a little kid, that science was saying it wasn't there, might be out there. And I even had a little scrapbook, Todd, of clippings we would have from the newspaper and from different stuff like that of Bigfoot. I still have that thing to this day.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I know that I've collected a few things over the years, but I think with the advent of the internet, you find out that it wasn't just relegated to Boggy Creek and out west and, you know, Skunk Ape. You found out that there are a whole lot more, and they're everywhere, and you pretty much can go in your backyard where there's a woods major river system and find them. So it's definitely fascinating. Is there any encounter that you can remember early on that intrigued you, that got you started?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. It's almost as if I was supposed to go do this. My grandmother knew I was interested in it, and she would actually take me to drive by this bayou, and I would sit out there in the evening, and she'd call it Bigfoot hunting, and I was, like, listening and looking. And, you know, years later, I actually took reports from that area, so that was kind of interesting. And then, so like I said, seeing the Legend of Boggy Creek, I was getting wheeled in the Texas Children's Hospital to get a hernia surgery. And before the surgery, that was on the local cable affiliate, and that was really interesting. But in terms of any experience when I was young, we did encounter something in the woods. Didn't know what it was, but I think we'll get to that later. But there was this really crazy vocalization that really kind of shocked me, and we didn't know what it was for years, but it'll kind of fit into the story later. I just came in it from the perspective initially of being just interested in this natural mystery, which at the time I thought, well, here was my understanding of Bigfoot. Okay, if they're real, they're in California, British Columbia, Washington, and Oregon. For some reason, Arkansas and Florida. You know, but you know, because you heard of the skunk ape thing, and then the legend of Boggy Creek was Arkansas, and then I looked at a map one day and I went, wait a second, Arkansas is right next to us. Maybe they crossed the border. Maybe the Falk monster crossed the border into Texas. You know, so I was just naturally curious about it, like I am everything else in the woods, and it just kind of developed over the years.
Yeah, I can imagine that. You know, the further you get into it, every time, and if you hear a noise and see something strange, your brain goes Bigfoot. So that would be, especially if you're reading a lot of those books and stuff. And I think all of us grew up in the 70s and 80s, had that Leonard Nimoy In Search Of, and you know, whether it's even earlier, Ivan Sanderson and Pursuit magazine. And Ivan was a famous zoologist, was occasionally on Johnny Carson, but he's one of my favorites. Wrote some pretty cool books, not only about zoological stuff, but Bigfoot around the world. So if you read the books,
you know, it's interesting. You mentioned like looking out in the woods and thinking things might be Bigfoot. Other than me and my grandmother's expeditions out to the edge of the bayou, sitting in the car with the windows rolled down, I didn't think everything was Bigfoot here, because I had no perspective that they could be in Texas other than maybe an inkling because of the Falk monster in Arkansas, you know. So I came up from a perspective and grew up training as a wildlife journalist and working with all kinds of animals. And so I think that's benefited me in any journalistic pursuit of this, because when I've entered the woods, my first thing I do is try to figure out if I hear a sound or talk to an eyewitness who's seen something. I try to eliminate everything that we know is there naturally, and even exotics that could have escaped and those kinds of things, before I get into the Sasquatch realm, because there is some of that. Where, like, you watch TV, or I've been out in the field with people, and like everything is a Sasquatch. Like, you know, every movement in the woods is a Bigfoot, you know. So I actually came up with a different kind of perspective in that. And when I sort of thought, you know, had encounters like maybe they are around here, then it really blew my mind, and I kind of had to open my eyes a little bit more.
Cool. What, has you had any kind of encounters in the field that you would, other than when you were younger there, that kind of make you think maybe they're around any places that you've gone hunting? Because I know you've been across the United States and stuff.
I don't remember dates except, like, you know, my wedding date, my wife's birthday, my daughter's birthday, my birthday. I don't remember dates. I do remember August the 20th of 2000. My father, who's now passed away, and Bobby Hamilton, who's on the show Killing Bigfoot now. I knew him as the founder of the Gulf Coast Bigfoot Research Organization. I went with him on an investigation, and we heard a vocalization this night in the deep woods of East Texas that was, I mean, I wish I'd had a recording device set up at the moment. It was so intense, so loud, was like nothing in the American forest. And interestingly, 8 months earlier, I was in the jungles of Venezuela. And I mean in the middle of nowhere in Venezuela, and kind of harassed some howler monkeys that were in this tree, and calling back at them. And the animal that I heard that night sounded very much like a howler monkey. If you've never heard one, Google howler monkey. Look on YouTube. They make some crazy sounds. But it was definitely not a howler monkey, and this animal broke branches as it retreated from us. It was crazy. It was nothing it was primate. I mean, I knew that was a primate sound, but it was unlike, it was like an amped up version of a howler monkey. You know, like someone injected a howler monkey with steroids and exposed it to gamma radiation. You know, I mean, it was like, it was insane. And I spent $2,000 I didn't have the next morning on night vision, because like I have to know more about this. So that was kind of the moment where I thought, you know, there's a good chance these things are real, and they're not only in the Pacific Northwest or in Florida or whatever. They could be here in East Texas as well.
That's crazy. Yeah. I mean, that one time I remember you and I were off in the Sabine River and got roared at, and, you know, pretty sobering.
Good time. Well, I remember that night, you know, because it was really quiet out there that night, and it wasn't a lion roar like a sound a lion makes. People, when they actually hear a lot, I've worked a lot around big cats. When they actually hear a lion roar, it sounds nothing like they think it's going to sound like, right? This was like a roar like you would think in a horror movie. It was just really loud and out of the blue, and it was very clear, you know?
Yeah. And it was, I think, just intimidation, because there was nothing after that. In fact, you know, it was good enough for me to maybe check my drawers when I went home. But that was the one time I did not bring. I left my recorder at your house, and literally it was, 10 minutes in the woods we get roared at? And you couldn't tell whether that was 30 yards away or 50 yards away. You know,
it was probably 50, 75 yards away. It sounds a lot closer, but it sounded like in the moment it was like it was 5 feet away from us. You know, I mean, it was so loud, and it goes back to, as a journalist, eliminating things. What on earth is that? No one knew we were going in those woods that night. There aren't people laying in the woods making loud, high decibel growls or roars. You know, so what is it? I mean, the fact is we don't know for sure, but we have a pretty good idea from kind of a profile of reports and different things like that of what such a thing could be. All I know is this: it was not a cougar, it wasn't a feral hog, it wasn't a bear. You know, it was something else, and it wasn't real happy with whatever it was not happy that Todd and Chester were in the woods that night.
True. And I'll never get that out of my head. But other than that, I mean, what other kind of encounters have you had?
You know,
anything in particular stands out?
Yeah, I'll tell you what I had. We were at a place in north central, so I guess it'd really be northern Texas, kind of a little bit west of Fort Worth, way up near Oklahoma, kind of. And Ken Gearhard, who has done a lot of cryptozoological writing and TV starring, was with me and my dad and my friend Patrick Trumbull. And we were looking on this levee overlooking this small lake. There's actually two small lakes at this spot. And we didn't have a flare, you know, night vision. We had night vision, but we did not have a thermal imaging. And we look out and we're shining a light beam, and we see this pair of eyes. It's really broad and spread apart on the edge of the water. And it was, we were 500 yards away, and we had a massive Q beam. And we were like, and you could see it was massive eyes. And then it shined for about 2 seconds, and it turned its head, whatever it was. Well, that was, and so I turned the light off a second. Because what clicked in my mind, going back to my training as a journalist, is I know the most obvious thing that you're going to shine in the woods at night in Texas is a deer. It was not a deer. No way it was a deer. But I thought it could be cattle. It could be a black cow, so we don't see it. But the thing is, you can shine a cow's eyes forever, and he never turns his head. Many times I've done that. So I turned the light back on, and it was there again. But we were shining it right at the shoreline. This time it was up, numerous feet up, and then it turned again and left. So we went down, there was a peninsula on the lake, and we were kind of going down into that area we kind of thought where it might be. And we started hearing this crazy growling in the bushes. And I crawled on my hands and knees down into that peninsula, hoping to get up on it, and it kept growling, whatever it was. And my dad grabbed my foot. Far enough, son. And I kind of came back to my senses and crawled back out. That was an interesting encounter. There have been numerous occasions of just interviewing people that were in. You were with me when I interviewed a woman who told a tale of one that came into her house and got into her refrigerator and kind of ransacked the house. And she actually talked about it. She thought it was, quote, a hobo, someone from the trains, a derelict. You know, someone who was just kind of living off the land because it would stink in the house. And why would someone break in and just not take the guns or valuables and take the food? And then she comes in one day and she looks in her attic. She had one of those pull, like, attic doors, like they pull down, you know, the steps into the attic. You know, all those old houses had those, like, walk-in attics. And she looks up, and there's this big hairy thing looking at her, and it kind of falls out of the attic on the ground in front of her. And then it stands up and pushes her out of the way and runs out of the door. I mean, to me, that was crazy, because we sit there, and this lady did not want to be on television. She didn't want to have her story on the net. She just wanted to share her story with someone. She called it a wild man, which is kind of a common attribute in parts of East Texas, centered around what's called the Big Thicket region, popularized by my friend who passed away, Rob Briggs, a great author and researcher and newspaper man. And that was really cool to me as a journalist to hear that story, you know. And I interviewed Bob Gimlin. I mean, I know Bob. Bob came to my I did four conferences called the Southern Crypto Conference. You spoke at the first, and then I had Bob speak at number three. And I spent 3 days with him here in Texas, and actually took him out into the Big Thicket National Preserve and interviewed him about his encounter on Bluff Creek in October 20th of 1967. And I asked him questions that said he'd never been asked. I asked him from wildlife perspective some of the things, and it was just really interesting, you know. So that's been a real journey for me. You know, we found some tracks that have been really interesting over the years, and it's been a journey.
What about the time you had your corn feeder smashed to oblivion and then had the baby tracks? I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, so I had this deer feeder on an old lease we were on that it had. I actually had an encounter there with my dad and my uncle and aunt when I was about 10 years old, where something scared us out of the woods that night. And it was so intense and so crazy sounding that four armed people left the woods. Now, I asked my dad, what is that? He said, it must be one of your uncle's bulls. He must have got tied up in the fence and got hurt and growling. So my first thought is, why aren't we helping him out if it is a bull? And secondly, I think it's bull. I don't think it's a bull. I think it's something else, but years later, he admitted he had no idea what it was and started telling me it might have been a bear. Then I got to work around bears in captivity for 2 years, and it sounded nothing like a bear. And then on August of 2000, the encounter that I mentioned earlier with the vocalization, my dad and I looked at each other and said, my God, that's what we heard at Aunt Ann's house. It was exact same type sound, exactly what it was. We knew that what was it, that piece of property was the same kind of animal, whatever it was. So go back to the lease. Something kept knocking my deer feeder over, and hogs will do that, and people can do that. But I go there, and it was a really heavy duty. It wasn't a cheap. My dad had made this feeder, and it had really well made, and my feeder was gone. And I mean gone. It wasn't there. And I'm thinking, my God, somebody stole my feeder, you know, because that happens in East Texas, unfortunately. And I'm about 100 yards off of a logging road into the woods here and on this particular 10,000-acre track. And I'm thinking, well, if I was out here 2 days ago and the thing was full of corn. If someone stole it, they'd have dumped the corn and then pulled the feeder out. And there wasn't any corn on the ground. And I can't figure this out. There's no way that even the hogs would wipe all that corn out in 2 days. There'd be some morsels left. And then I kind of see some drag marks, and I walk about 20 yards away, and that feeder had been smashed against a tree. Like something had picked it up and smashed a hole. You could see where it hit the tree, smashed against the tree, and the metal legs were bent all up, and there wasn't one sign of any mechanical use of a tool or anything like that. And I'm like, that is interesting. Now, what was also interesting on the same piece of property where you and I went before when I first met you and you came down and did some research with me. My aunt thought we were crazy about even investigating a Bigfoot thing, but she said there's an old boy that used to hunt down where the area you're in. He said he saw a silver bear. Okay? A silver bear. So that intrigued me. I would love to see a silver bear. That would be pretty awesome. She said, so well, tell me about this bear he saw, a silver bear. She said it was silverish gray. And it was squatted down on the high line. And when he shined it with his light, he said he was quote-unquote coon hunting. It was squatted down on the high line. It stood up when he shined it with the light, looked at him, ran across his high line, which is about 50 yards from one side to the other on two legs. And I went, silver bear, my foot, or maybe Bigfoot. That's all in the same area. Interestingly, as a journalist, I like to look at patterns. I like to look at things that repeat themselves. And in that county, which is Newton County, unsolicited reports, I had the Silver Bear report. I had two different people tell me within about a 5 to 7 mile area of seeing a basically a silver gray colored walking primate looking thing, and one of them actually called it a Bigfoot. And one of them, two of the sightings were crossing the exact same spot on the road, which was fascinating to me. So there was a pattern there. Who would have thought that? Who would have made that up? And this is way back before Finding Bigfoot was on TV and Bigfoot was popularized like it was. No one would know. Everybody thought of Bigfoot being brown or black. There wasn't anything about multicolored ones. So to me, that was an interesting pattern.
That was definitely something else. But, I mean, you've had so many counters and stuff. I mean, it'd be pretty much go on and on and on. I didn't know if anything – I know that kind of stood out. I know that you've seen them walk on all fours, and which is a little freaky for – and a lot of people don't even realize they go on all fours a lot. And that would be kind of unnerving if you're expecting a bear and all of a sudden it's not a bear. So
I saw something. I can't call it a Sasquatch. Don't know what it was. I'm gonna call it an unknown. On that near that same piece of property, 1997, before I kind of got smartened up to this topic in Texas, coming out of that piece of property, and I drive out and I see these two things walking on fours. The back was flat, and they were way — one was bigger than the other. They were way bigger than a hog. They weren't cattle. And I'm thinking, what on earth is that? And I swing back around, and they're gone. And so within 20 seconds, they had crossed probably 75 yards of a high line right away, right, you know, probably 30 minutes before dark. And I saw Bill Asmussen. Both of those are great crypto artists, by the way. But Bill Asmussen did a great sketching of an eyewitness account of a Bigfoot creature on all fours, and it looked exactly like that in hindsight. And that was, to me, was really an interesting report. Once again, pre-internet Bigfoot craze and all that stuff. And, you know, it just made me think more like, wow, this is not just a legend. There's something there, man. I would love to have had my camera at that moment. I would love to have had a video camera, but this is before, you know, smartphones with high def stuff, you know?
Yeah. Well, even if you got a high def phone and everything, you have to have the composure to take a picture and not just run.
Sure.
And people don't realize that when you've got a camera, and I remember I watching what I believe is a mountain lion with a friend of mine, and we just watched it, and it was about 4 years ago in Rogers County, Oklahoma. Well, we're watching the thing instead of picking up and taking our — and, oh yeah, I got a camera, because you're just stunned, and you're and that those seconds are just frozen. It's like a clock on clunk clunk for every second. So it's not as easy. I think that's where
well
you get GoPros and stuff really help.
Most people —
you what? Say it again?
But I've trained myself as a journalist, a wildlife journalist, to always have some kind of camera device. I've jumped out and done all kind of crazy stuff, getting animal pictures on the side of the roads and everything else. So if I ever did see, you know, these creatures are real, and I saw one walk across the road, I think, and it stood there, it's going to get some kind of an image of it at some point. But most people, man, it's not going to be — you know, they're going to just be in awe. You know, they're going to be like, wow, of any kind of animal like that, you know, even if it's a bear they've never really seen before.
Yeah. Well, even with a mountain lion, I've had them do that. I've cut in front of the car and you're frozen. And, you know, that's where I think these GoPros and stuff — I know one of the guys from the GCBR road, Don McDonald, was on the show, I think the first or second episode, and he flipped his GoPro to the side of his head and got one moving. And I believe it was Louisiana, and because he wasn't looking straight at it, but the shot through the field, those GoPros are awesome. I mean, and the technology is only going to get better for that kind of stuff. But one last encounter, because I want to ask you this about this, and you can — I don't know if you want to talk about it or not, because, you know, I still got a bunch of questions I got to ask you. But, you know, it was about 3 years ago, and the two sets of glowing eyes without any kind of light on them on a hill in southeastern Oklahoma. Still
had
a hard
time
with that one. And I can't even believe it's still not to this day. I can't even accept what I saw. You want to talk about that? If not, that's fine. And, you know,
yeah, I don't mind
what
that.
You saw on the hill. And
this
you were there with me, and you're the journalist. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it was 2 years ago, this November, I think that happened. And I don't know what it was. I know I saw glowing, spaced apart, what looked to be eyes. I saw the eyes close or the light cease and come back open. And then I saw what looked like a head turn. And then you hear something walk off. That's what got me. Something walked off out of there for, I don't know, you know, we could hear it for 2 minutes walking out of that area and kind of a mountainous area. And I don't know. It was the strangest thing. It was so bizarre. I kind of put that in the X-Files. I think we may have to call Mulder and Scully on that one because I honestly don't know. But I know I was with you. Something was there. What it was, or, you know, we were trying to figure out if it was a light from camps way off or something, but I don't know what was walking off as soon as the eye shot went away. You know, that's what threw
me. Well, I got one whoop I recorded that night off of those that same general vicinity, and if you close your ears, you're in another country hearing a monkey go off. So, you know, I can't say for sure, but I know that it's one of those things where you're thinking, I don't know if you ever get that out of your head, or you kind of even, you can't even, there's a part of your brain that does, I guess there's a point where you accept what you saw, but it was freaky. Man, that's one of the cool things about Bigfoot stuff is there's a lot of freaky stuff. And, you know, if you like adrenaline rushes and you like roller coasters, then Bigfooting might be for you, especially if you like the outdoors.
Well, man, you and I were in North Louisiana. We were in the infamous Monster Central property with our good friend. I call him a good friend. I've seen him a couple of years. Love the guy, Jim Lansdale, the monster hunter.
Great
and,
guy.
And and we were on his property, and you and I had something call out with this crazy sound and then like stomp its way down to us. Until it got about 5 or 10 yards away, then it crossed because we didn't want to break. We thought it was going to walk right in front of us, and it crossed the creek right there in front of us, you know. And so if you want an adrenaline rush, and this could definitely be the ticket for you because I have that kind of curiosity that gets me in trouble sometimes, you know, in the wild. But I've had a few moments where I'm like, I think I'm stupid for being out here, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, that mechanical bird noise, I've heard it on Jim's property. I've heard it in West Texas. I've heard it. We heard it in the Big Thicket 2 months ago. And I'm telling you, that is one of the most unnerving noises that, I haven't heard it a whole lot. And I don't get on YouTube and listen to a lot of the people, you know, different sounds and stuff. But, you know, I mean, it's just a low, you know, ew, ew, and I'm telling you, it gets on your nerves. It is under it. It's like it freaks you out after a while. It's like, you know, some kind of music in a horror flick. And that's
well, you know,
that was there that night. And that was that night we got it. I have that on tape that night, and that thing charged us. And we had two of them. And I'm telling you, it's. I mean. It sounds great, but, you know, you're like, oh, man, I can't believe I stayed through that. Anyhow, I mean, I can keep going on and on because you've been doing this for, you know, a couple decades, and, you know, some decades probably before didn't even realize you were out there experiencing them, like a lot of hunters and a lot of people that are in the book Bigfoot realize, hey, that thing I heard 5 years ago, that's what it was or could have been. So, hey, I wanted to ask you, is there any hard evidence you've ever found before?
Yeah, you know, I have found tracks. I have plaster cast of tracks that we found on numerous occasions. I have some juvenile tracks. Last tracks I found were in May of 2012, South Newton County, near the same creek bed you and I have walked down. Same creek, actually, just a few miles, probably 5 or 6 miles downstream. They were really good tracks. They were 14 inches. They were deep in rock and mud. And I've found quite a few tracks over the years. Actually found what looks like a giant handprint on Bluff Creek in 2002. I have that here in
hilarious.
My private collection. Yeah, and I found a track in the same spot. And they were doing Bigfoot tours or something the next day. And I went out there to go cast it early in the morning. The tour people, the first time tours had ever been done there, and they walked right across it.
Yeah, that's what's so funny about that. So I wish I could have gone with you that time. And yeah, that is funny because, they have people walk right by it. So Hey, what, anything else? I mean, that, you know, as far as, I know that you know guys that have found guys, and there's always been rumors, but, I mean, you know, has there been anything else that you know of and that you know people as far as something more hardcore? I know that I've had stuff tested for DNA and junk like that, but has there been anything that you know of, you don't have to say names or anything, that has been kind of cool or evidence-wise or...
Yeah, I was at a place one night when some evidence was collected and was privy to DNA tests years ago, and it was inconclusive. Also, I have a game camera photo from Newton County that a guy showed me. He said I could take a picture of it with my phone, and he's never put it on the internet, and it's kind of blurred out from the sun, like the sun was right into the camera. You can see the outline of it. And it really is shockingly similar to the Patterson-Gimlin outline. I have that here, and I've never shown it to the public, and I never will, because, you know, as a journalist, one thing you can't do is mess over your sources. And that was interesting.
Yes.
Because it's light-colored. Obviously, it's light-colored, and it's in the exact same spot as the silver reports, the silver creature reports.
Wow.
The light gray. So that was fascinating to me.
That's cool. Yeah, I know there's a lot of people out there, and you hear a lot of people. I mean, for every one person that sticks their neck out, there's 5-10 people don't mention names. And I know I work at a huge company, and there's a lot of people. You know, I know guys that have seen them in Vietnam, which were probably rock apes. I know guys that have had relatives in the Brazilian jungles and stuff. I know that I encountered stories in New Guinea. There are a lot of people that have seen a lot of stuff they just don't like to talk about. And there's a lot of people that have got physical, like photographic proof that just don't show it. And they just want to get made fun of. But that's pretty interesting stuff. Can you explain why there's not been any body found?
Well, you know, it's really interesting because if these animals are real, they're a primate of some kind. Primates are long-lived animals. And these animals are probably fairly rare. They're not as common as obviously as a white-tailed deer or maybe a feral hog in the South. There's probably even bears in the Pacific Northwest. So if you have an animal in fairly low population densities that is long-lived, say 50, 60 years old in the wild, maybe even older, then you have a small chance of ever finding a body. And when bodies disappear quickly in the woods because of vultures and coyotes and wolves and other scavengers out there. So, and then you got to figure someone has found a piece of a body rotting, stinking in the woods. Unlike, this is my gripe with the big, there's several gripes with the Bigfoot community. Number one is it's not the most important topic on the planet. And number two is not everyone is a Bigfoot researcher. So if someone finds a putrefied foot in the woods, that they see something that stinks, they generally don't bring it home in a bag. You know, they go walk past them.
He knows they're me or you.
Yeah, they're me or you. Then we're like, you know, taking roadkill home, you know. But so that's – I just think it's not much of a chance to find a body out there. And here's the other thing. Who's to say bodies have not been found but have been confiscated or people just held on to parts of it or whatever? You know, you don't know. But the chances of finding them is
true.
Very, very, very tiny.
Yes, and you know, if you don't find bear in an area that, I mean, you were there the time that the bear remains were found, and I'll tell you, you get a better chance of winning $200 million of finding a bear skeleton. And that bear actually demised from Sasquatch.
And we're talking about
which
that
is
part
interesting.
That was left of that bear. That was an extremely tiny part of the bear that was left, you know, in a bear-dense area. So finding something like this is going to be a needle in a haystack.
Yes, that's it's still a fun search, but do you think these animals in South America, South United States, are the same as the Pacific Northwest? I know originally for years when there was a battle between Bigfoot groups, they're a different animal, they're different creatures, and you know, and basically, what's your theory on that?
Theory is, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't know, but I know from consistent reports there seem to be some differences from Pacific Northwest to South. It could be like differences in mountain lions from the ones in Central America, the ones in Canada. Size, appearance, the pelage is a little bit different. It could be a subspecies, you know. There's other things like the Mayaka ape from Florida that Lauren Coleman popularized, and he put the story out on that thing. I think there may be a couple of different kind of things going on out there, but I don't think the main reports of things are that far off from being the same creature.
Yeah. What do you have any favorite encounters that, you know, this come to your mind? I mean, not just things that were cool, but, you know, favorite ones. I mean, that you kind of like to talk about and laugh at maybe even, I guess, if it's funny running in the middle of the night.
Well, there was one time my good friend Patrick Trumbull and I, my dad, were doing some hauling on a dirt road on that same piece of property we talked about several times in Newton County, Texas. And it was like Patrick's maybe first time or second time in the field, and I let out the long gibbon-like primate yell, and this thing yelled back with that about 10 times my volume. And Patrick is not exactly Mr. Nobility. Patrick is not an athlete. Patrick's just a dude, you know, and he shoots past me. I'm sitting on the bed of the truck. He shoots past me and almost slams his head into the glass of the truck, and it got me too. I mean, I jumped back too. I mean, it sounded like a Metallica's PA system blasted back that call at us, and it was on top of us. You know, that was funny because of the, you know, we both got caught off guard, and I saw Patrick move faster than I ever thought that he would move. There's another incident that is, you know, and this is a good point, Todd, is the fun element of this. If someone's doing this to change the world, stop, get another hobby. This is fun. This is fun, interesting. It's research. There's important research possibly that could be done. But it's fun as well, you know. And me and my dad and Bobby Hamilton again and Patrick Trumbull were at a piece of property, I believe it was Polk County, Texas, years ago, and were the same vocalization that got me to think these things might be real. What sounded off, and we're in the deep woods camping. It's about 4 o'clock in the morning. We drift off to sleep. And all of a sudden, as we're all asleep, we hear a branch snap. And I don't mean like a twig. I mean a large green branch snap right by the tent. We all jumped up, right? We all, whoa. And immediately you heard, it was my 12 gauge, Bobby's 4570, my dad 357. And I look and Patrick's unfolding a pocket knife. And I'm like, dude, what are you going to do with that? And he goes, I'm going to kill myself if it comes in the tent. True story. And
yeah,
the thing growled. You hear like the slow walk, and you hear footsteps. And I growled at that one before, and Bobby goes, don't you blanking growl at this one, Chester. and they tried to get me to open the tent, but I was too chicken. And Patrick goes, dude, it's standing by my head. He said, what do you mean? It's standing by my head. And we get out of a tent that next morning, and there were 18 – he has this on video, by the way. There were 18-inch impressions in the pine straw behind the tent, right where his head was. So that was an interesting –
that's awesome.
You know, we call it the tent episode.
Well, I remember one, Patrick, when you forgot about – it was we were off the Sabine River, and Patrick went to take a leak, turned around, and got hit in the face with a stick.
The guy was a magnet for it. Patrick's one of those magnets.
Yeah.
Like something always tends to happen when we're out in the woods, you know? Good guy.
That's funny. He is. But you know what? It's good times, too. So if you like to, you know, go out in the woods and, you know, I tell you what, anyone that says you go out in the daytime, you see nothing. You go out at night, there's all kinds of wildlife. And I've had armadillos and other stuff, even in a ghillie suit, come behind me. And I'm telling you, You're cleansing yourself of every sin you ever did because you're that everything is magnifying. A squirrel coming behind you sounds like boom, you know, like it's a giant machinery and an elephant.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's part of the whole experience. It's just everything's alive at night. And that's what
that's why I'm doing more wildlife research at night. I'm really trying to, when I can, hit the woods at night in pursuit of a lot of wildlife, even photography at night. And that's really challenging, but it can be done because mm-hmm. the woods are alive. You can take a woodlot and go in it and hear nothing except maybe a squirrel in the daytime or a few birds. And at nighttime, there's all kinds of stuff prowling around. So the people was like, well, there's nothing out there. I'll tell you what, you trek into the woods, me and Todd, in some of these locations, and you tell me there's nothing out there, because I promise you, you will encounter something out there. And it's always very interesting.
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely interesting. One thing I'd love to ask is, what do you think, in your opinion, these are? You've been doing this long enough. You've gone through all the – there's all kinds of theories out there, but – you know, everyone, you back and forth on stuff. If you're me, you're back and forth, and okay, it's this, it's an animal, it's some demonic, it's, you know, something out of the Bible, you know, it's an animal, it's an unknown primate. What do you think these things are?
Well, that's the question of all questions. Number one, are they real? And number two is, if they are real, what are they? And for years, my thought was they were just simply an unknown primate. Some kind of a primate that we have not yet discovered. I vacillate on that now because my worldview is the Judeo-Christian worldview. I'm a follower of Jesus Christ, and I take the Bible very literally. And there's a thing in Genesis where it talks about Nephilim, which were the offspring of fallen angels and women. And if you look in other accompanying Jewish texts, the book of Jasher and the book of Enoch and the book of Jubilees and these other texts, you learn about there was a lot more than just the giants. There were other things that were done in this genetic contamination of the planet, you know. And I think there's a chance, because it said there were Nephilim before the flood and after. They possibly could be some kind of an offshoot of that. I think they're material. I don't think they disappear. I think they're flesh and blood. But I think their origins could possibly be nefarious.
Yes. Yeah, I could see that for sure. I mean, that's kind of what I've come. I started years ago thinking they're demonic. Then I went to animals, and now I'm pretty much convinced that this is what the best explanation is, too. And, you know, it explains why they're so good at hiding from cameras. And you see things like on Les Strode's show with apples disappearing and other people with paranormal stuff and possibly even the eyes that we saw in southeastern Oklahoma without the aid of any kind of lights on them and two pairs moving and just the whole dread you feel. I mean, you don't feel dread in the woods, you know, if there's a elk or a deer, you know, you may get scared, but there's that whole this atmosphere changes sometimes with these things. And you know, I don't think they're necessarily out to get everybody, but there definitely is some elements that, you know, is it they almost act like a human, you know, and other times you wonder, well, they almost act like an animal. And so there's a whole mixture there that I think that the whole Nephilim thing in the Bible actually probably to me makes the most sense. And I know, look, if they were straight up spirits, they would be in the middle of a building. You go on these ghost shows, and they're all in the middle of the buildings, in the car. And these things are in the woods. They got to have food, water, and cover. You don't have that, you don't
that's
have
it.
And
that's it. So,
you know,
that's
pretty
a great
much
point,
what I,
Todd. Really
I
great
see.
Point.
What is, do you think this is a subject worth pursuing as a wildlife journalist? And do you have any wrap-up comments you'd like to make? And
yeah, man. And I, first off, I salute you. I mean, you have been to places like New Guinea and Australia and in the middle of nowhere, and even people like me who've done a lot of research here in the States. I mean, I've been into the jungles of South America, but man, New Guinea is so far in the middle of nowhere. So I salute you for your pursuit of the mysterious and always bringing it back to glorifying Christ in the process, because really that's what it's all about, man. I wouldn't have a lot of this knowledge if it wasn't for you planting seed me years ago, so thank you. But in terms of a wildlife journalist pursuing this, yeah, I do believe so. I don't think it's the most important topic out there. I don't do most of my work on this, but I do believe it's worth pursuing. There's a story. Let's say it's a hoax. It's the biggest mass hoax involving the woods and wildlife in the history of the world, if it is. That alone is a story. But every time I dig deeper, I don't see hoax. I see a lot of those on YouTube, but I don't see hoax. I see real people who've seen something that terrified them or made them change their habits about going in the woods, and I've seen footprints myself. I've heard vocalizations. I've seen a few things I can't explain. So my conclusion is it is worth pursuing, and I will pursue it. Now, I have people who think that's all I do because I've been on a few shows, and it's very little what I do, but it's part of my repertoire in wildlife investigation. And I think if anyone is an intellectual journalist out there that is interested in wildlife, I think it's something worth checking out, because it's either the biggest mass hoax in history or there's something out there.
I totally agree. Well, it's been great having you on. I'm going to have you on again because you have a wealth of knowledge in this area, and I think you're anywhere close to being finished as a cryptozoologist. I used to call you the, you know, Chester Moore crypto hunter, and there's a reason, because you are like a Bigfoot magnet.
Well, Todd used to call and leave when we had a voice, when we had like a regular answering machine. I'd come home and I would hear this long message of this whole song, Chester Moore crypto hunter hunting cryptids around the world, and it was a catchy melody, and so that's the nature of our friendship. But you know, the truth is, Todd, thank you for this platform and creating this great platform, and also for the opportunity to talk about this, because this is about wildness. You know, Henry David Thoreau, the great naturalist, Thoreau wrote that in wildness is the preservation of the world. My life would be radically different without wildlife. My life would be radically different without the encounters with nature. And right now, just a few minutes ago, I heard a barred owl out in my backyard there. It's been raining for
Love
the last, you know, 72 hours, and there's frogs out there sounding off. And even that brings me peace, because it brings us back to God's original intent for us to commune and be around the creation. And my life would be different, I think all of ours would, without wildness, without mysteries. Although this is one I think we need to solve.
That's great. Well, it's great having you on, and I think that'll end our show. And if there's anything else you have to say, then you know, just go ahead and say it. And we'll just thank you for coming on, Chester. I appreciate it and
appreciate
all
it,
you
brother.
Do. And
great show, man. And I'm going to be a big fan and listening to Jurassic Park Radio and telling everyone about it. And I can't wait to hear who's coming next, man.
Till the tears run down from my eyes, Lord, somebody, ooh, somebody, can anybody find me somebody to love?
Alexa, play hits from Queen.
Okay.
Somebody to love. Somebody.
With Amazon Music, a voice is all you need. Get tens of millions of songs. Download the Amazon Music app today.
My heart skipping a beat, you're not close enough, so that space between you and me, let's lose it. The way you're dancing, swaying to the music, girl, that body and how you move it. Every time you cross my mind, girl, I lose it.
Alexa, play the Country Heat playlist.
Okay.
I don't think you know what you're doing to me, you got my...
With Amazon Music, a voice is all you need. Get tens of millions of songs. Download the Amazon Music app today.